Yo, what's up? Last Night Dilator. We're just uploading this 2 weeks from now. Number 83 or 84. This is a special one. Live from Inglewood. We got Chris from Despise You. I mean, I don't need to give you an introduction. Just what's up?
What's up? Thanks for having me.
Yeah. This is crazy because I was expecting to come here and, like, because every interview I've seen from you, you're, like, really awkward. Uh-huh. And, like, people have told me, like, yo, he's, like, awkward dude. You know what I mean? Like, it might be crazy for you to... Yeah, like, very, like don't talk a lot. Uh-huh. And I'm actually recording while you're cooking. So that's...
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy.
Everyone's got to eat.
Yeah.
At least once a day.
So I think this is a special one just because... We're talking about earlier, we live in a world of, like, saturation, and with the internet, everybody could pretend to be someone else and, like, do a good research on how to pretend to be that person. So, like, Despise You was a weird one because, like, I've been to, like, heavy music, power violence, hardcore, like, probably since middle school, but Despise You didn't, like, I didn't really, like, listen to Despise You until, like, probably, like, later on, and when I found out about it, I was like, oh, this is cool, but I never saw how you looked, and then when I saw you, like, live, I was like, oh, this guy has, like, a Dodger hat. And, like, Dickie Shorts, I was like, is it you really about it? Or is he, like, you know what I mean? Just, like, a dude who, like, likes to dress like that.
Uh-huh.
So that was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then being from South Central, and then when I heard you were from Inglewood.
Yeah.
I was like, okay.
And that's where we're standing right now, no?
Yeah. I mean, you lived here all your life. You never moved.
I was born at Sentinella. Been here ever since.
How come you haven't moved?
Just because this is my city.
Do you think that's like
I got roots here.
Do you think that's like an LA thing? Like, a lot of people will stay in their, specifically in their neighborhood.
Yeah,
not just
in
LA.
Yeah, they can afford it. You know, with the fucking prices now, it's tough. But, like, yeah, I'm gonna be here forever. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm not worried about moving anywhere. I'm not trying to move anywhere.
Yeah.
I like it here. So, for the good and the bad.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
So, I mean, you grew up in Inglewood in the 80s.
I was born in 71.
Damn.
Fuck. That's 70s, 80s, 90s. Good, the bad, the ugly.
That's crazy. So you lived through a lot of shit.
Oh, yeah. Seen it all.
You're older than my dad. That's crazy. That's crazy.
Thanks, bro. Appreciate it.
I want to talk about that for a bit. The difference between LA before and now. I mean, we got the basics of gentrification. But I want to talk about overall what was like LA in the 80s, when you were like old enough to.
In the 80s, I was just skating a lot and getting turned on to a bunch of different types of music.
Yeah.
Mostly, like, I met up with a couple people in like 84, probably ninth grade, that were more into like thrash and crossover than punk. And so I really started getting into those type of bands, you know, like Slayer and Venom and whatever. But also too, at the same time, like, you know, like all the electro funk stuff was happening, and it was big and thick over here. Same with South LA. And there was a place down the road called the Mayflower Ballroom, and they had dances and shows. And I went to see a few shows there, like Egyptian Lover and whatever it was, Watts Up Band and stuff like that. So I went to those shows too. You know, I was into all kinds of different music.
If you don't mind me asking, what are you, half anything or are you full?
My dad's like 3/4 Blackfoot Indian, and then my mom's Irish.
Okay, so you're a mix of a lot. So how was that growing up in the hood?
Fine with me.
Did you get made fun of?
No, I mean, I just so old, like, no, like, a few times, like, much older, like, black grandmoms would say stuff, like, hey, my dog doesn't like white people, or whatever, and I was like, fuck, there's no white people here,
yeah.
So, that's stupid to train your dog like that,
yeah.
Like, I'm the only one, you know,
yeah.
But no, then I started, my dad told me to take Spanish classes starting in first grade. So I started taking Spanish classes in first grade, so like I was pretty good on Spanish, and then Inglewood turned very Latino right around 80, shit, I'll call it like 82 or something.
Was it more of black or white?
All black.
Okay.
90%. I think at the time, I was reading some article for school, and it was the third most black populated city in America.
Interesting.
Because it was D.C., Gary, Indiana, and Inglewood, California. That's, you know, percentage of the population, you know.
And how do white people end up in Inglewood?
Fuck, I don't know, man. They were gone when I was born.
I mean, how'd your mom end up in Inglewood?
Because they couldn't afford to live in Venice, which is they grew up. My parents grew up around Venice, you know, or Mar Vista, Sawtelle actually is where they Sawtelle, and so they bought a house in England, and that was in I think they got the house in 70, and then I was born in 71.
And your dad told you to learn Spanish?
Well, because my dad worked construction, like he went to Vietnam. Then he was a carpenter when he got out, so he saw what was going on, and he was just like, I remember because the school I was going to, they offered Spanish as a class,
mm-hmm.
as an elective or whatever.
Yeah,
I mean, not in elementary school because that was mandatory, but like you had to take some sort of language class, and he's like, you're taking Spanish, and so I just took Spanish and learned Spanish, and then like back to what I was saying, like around 82. It almost seemed like night, like overnight, within 6 months, like it was all black, and then it was all fucking Latino.
Well,
and it was from what I remember, it was from two. There was mainly Durango, was the area where a lot of people were coming from to this part of the west side of Inglewood.
Was it when Reagan was giving out papers?
Yeah. Which is a trip, because when you hear people talk shit about Reagan, he's like, fuck, dude. Like, yeah, he did that huge amnesty.
Mexicans,
you
know? Love Reagan.
Yeah. So, the neighborhood changed, like, crazy. And, like, you know, when you hear about gentrification now, and it's so negative, but, like, when it happened back then, there wasn't an internet, but it was kind of the same thing, you know? Like, you had one group of people coming in, and however they did it, it pushed another group of people out east.
Yeah.
I mean, or further east, you know?
Well,
because, it went, from what I remember as a kid, a lot of the people that were here, they moved to, Hyde Park area, which is east of here.
Yeah.
It's still Inglewood, but it's right up on the border, right?
Yeah.
And then, because I had a bunch of friends in Hyde Park, and I would go there all the fucking time, ride my bike over there, and that's, dude, Hyde Park was fucking wild at that time, dude. I mean, it was it's still kind of fucking wild, you know, but like back then it was wild, dude, with the shootings and stuff. And whatever, people can get mad about it or happy about it or whatever, but that's what happened. I was here, that's exactly what happened. Like one group came in, the other group moved out, and then that group that came in put the roots down, and they're still down. Now there's second and third generations of that group that are here.
But unlike gentrification with say wealthy white people, is that they got money, so they raise the rent, and then those people with money come in. But I'm assuming Mexicans didn't have that much money, so how did they
have more money than the people that were living here before?
Really?
Well, yeah. Why else would it happen? If this is one, you have two people that have X amount of dollars, right?
Yeah.
And all things are equal. Everybody's got $100. So there's two people in the house, and they each have $100. Well, now, and they're kind of struggling and they're tight. And then you have another group of people that move in, and there's two of them, but they're friends with another couple, and they can all live together. So now you've doubled your income.
Oh,
and
that makes sense.
And there's no drama at the house. When I was a kid, every fucking family that I went into that pad, there was five fucking six kids, a couple couples, and I didn't hear anybody yelling. You know what I mean?
Can I pause it real quick?
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Wait, actually, you know, fuck you. Go continue. I'll answer later.
No, go for it.
No, go. That's not actually even that.
Yeah, so I didn't, I just think that the dynamic was different, you know? That's from, I'm not talking on some fucking,
shit. Yeah.
It's what a 12-year-old eyes saw, you know? And that's what it was to me, you know, like the ability for the people that came on the second wave to get together and put their money together and make things happen was a winning formula.
Okay.
You know?
I mean, to put it into words.
I mean, there's no wealthy white people moving into Englewood right now.
Oh, yeah.
I dare you to find me one.
Oh, yeah.
Or South LA or Watts or
Compton. South LA is trying to happen, but it's not happening.
Yeah, dude, it's not. Yeah, I mean, you can say, okay, I found three families.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, there's 700,000 people.
Yeah.
That means nothing.
Yeah.
You know, probably no more people got struck by lightning, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I guess the way I put it, the way I also thought what you're saying is that I think black families at the time were being a product of their environment, right? When Mexicans were coming in from straight up from Mexico, they were being product of Mexico, not this environment because they're just coming in.
Yeah.
So what I'm imagining is like a Mexican family coming from Mexico, what are they products of? They are products of poverty and working hard. So they come here, they can make it work. But what I've seen with generations coming down is that now the Mexicans are a product of here, if that makes sense. I mean, it's not a good thing or a bad thing. It's just like an observation.
What do you mean a product of here?
So, like, for example, me. Like, I'm born in Mexico, but my family, like, I came as a little kid. So I'm basically an L.A. kid, you know what I mean? Because I don't know anything about Mexico, you know what I mean? I grew up in L.A., so I'm a product of L.A., right. You know what I mean? So I'm a product of... I'm not like, I speak a certain way and dress a certain way and know certain things, but I don't know anything about over there, if that makes sense.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Right. No, just like an observation.
Yeah.
But yeah, so...
And then with the music, the kids that I was hanging out with before that whole amnesty thing happened, I guess we can... I was talking about... There's this girl, Angela Boatwright. She's a photographer, and she did a lot of photography, I think, for the Los Punks show and movie and whatever. And she was asking me about that because she was doing a thing on, like, South Central Punks or whatever. And I was talking to her about that and how I thought that when I thought about it, like, it was the Reagan amnesty that threw the balance off in Los Angeles with the, you know, the different neighborhoods going more brown.
Right? Mm.
But when those kids, like, I would listen to, like, the shit I would listen to, Kiss, fucking Black Flag, whatever the hell. And the kids that were there at the time didn't listen to any of that shit. They couldn't even. They listened to, like, the Commodores, fucking...
Skitty Woodle?
What was that?
Skitty Woodle? The band, Skitty Woodle? No, not that.
No, like, I'm talking about, like, in the late 70s, oh, early 80s, like, just, like, black R&B. Stuff, you know, like stuff like the Commodores, Lionel Richie, maybe that Michael Jackson Off the Wall record was out, that was big. But then when the Latino kids or the Mexican kids, Chicano kids, whatever, came in, they came in already just fucking into metal, you know?
Okay.
Maiden shirts, Scorpion shirts, fucking Dio shit, Ozzy. And I didn't know any of those bands real. I mean, I kind of knew of them. But, like, I was like, fuck, man. Like, I would talk to them about music and, you know, liking Iron Maiden isn't much different from liking, like, the Dead Kennedys. It's still guitar-oriented. It's aggressive. It's different, you know.
Yeah.
So those kids are all down to, like, listen to my shit and I listen to their shit. And we were pretty much just, like, hit it off right off the bat. With the kids, and there was a fucking ton of them over here, dude. This on the other side of the freeway, bro, was that all that air freight was 3-story apartments,
yeah,
full of motherfuckers. That full, dude. Like, so, you know, they were everywhere. Those kids, you know, and like, then like, I like, you know, they would see me skating, so they'd ask questions, and then they'd get us. Maybe their dad would buy them some shitty fucking Sure Grip skateboard or something, and then I would try to help them get like something better. You know, because, like, now we're hanging out all the time, like, you know, like, it matters, kind of, like, you have a shitty skateboard or something that's decent, you know?
Yeah.
And then we just, yeah, that's when all that stuff happened.
It all meshed together.
It did. Yeah, yeah. It really did, man. Yeah.
And how about graffiti? Did that come in the 90s, or it started off more in the 80s? Was it, like, a day and night type situation, or was it, like...
I mean, there's always a gang graffiti,
uh-huh.
Like, the, like... artistic type of graffiti, I would say, like, maybe like 86 probably is when it started to get like pretty like,
and what was like
artistic,
and what was like gang graffiti, like, more, was when did you think that start?
I saw Gang Graffiti since I was a baby.
Interesting.
You know, all over the place.
And what do you think in 86 made people like, oh, I'm going to do graffiti too, even though I'm not a real...
It's probably like the hip-hop stuff, or that one book came out. It was called Subway Art, and it was a thick book of New York graffiti on trains, and it inspired people here that were writing graffiti to, like, up their game or whatever you want to call it, and they did. And there was some... Then that's... I want to say around 87 or so is probably when that that WCA crew came out, West Coast Artists. It was always it was all over on the west side, and they were just fucking hitting bangers everywhere, dude, like badass stuff. And then I don't know the timeline on it because I didn't grow up in that area, but then like CBS was really like one of the big ass influential graffiti crews off of Melrose. They were on Melrose, all the alleys by Melrose. They just there's a shitload of those guys that are like somebody's now in like in the entertainment industry,
you know? Yeah,
because like, they're from the origins of the street,
yeah, you know?
Fairfax High.
Yeah,
I mean, imagine how much shit came out of Fairfax High. CBS, Red Hot Chili Peppers, tons of shit. Tyler, I don't even know
Tyler the Creator.
Yeah, I didn't grow up there, so like I don't know. Yeah. I just know from like once in a while going over there to go to a record store or whatever.
Yeah. And how was
Bleecker Bob's was on Melrose, and it always had good import records.
And how was like, I guess how was that like you, like, did you start doing graffiti after that?
Nah,
because I know your artwork is like really like prominent in that. Like a lot of people like.
I would do some random shit for neighborhood people.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah. I guess while we're on the topic, looking now, I think Finn McKenty on that video that we talked about earlier, he your art or like your aesthetic, you know, you being into metal, art, punk, and then graffiti and being part of this. You look at now and like you see how brands, like streetwear brands, do that.
Yeah.
Does it bum you out, or do you think it's like, oh, like this is cool that this is now like this, these things that I liked as a kid are now like acceptable, or does it bum you out?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't bum me out at all. But you can tell what's genuine and what's not. I can see what's real and what's not. You know, and like I never did anything to make money. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and I still don't. I have a job. I have a job, like, and the art shit and the band stuff and whatever, I just do it because I want to do it.
Yeah.
Because I get something else out of it beyond dollars, you know? So, yeah, I don't care about any of that. I've been hit up to do, the band too has been hit up to do stuff that just is pretty big, and it's just not something that we would ever do.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be something that we would respect ourselves for doing.
Yeah.
And so we didn't do it, and we just don't even talk about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's there, like one thing in particular, it was big, and I'm like, yeah, that won't work, you know?
Yeah.
Like long term, you know? Like,
I mean, well, with that being said, that now that's sold, like, that's just sold without any, like, purpose or without any background. It's just like, here's this, things meshed together on a shirt, it's out. At the time, you being from the 90s, and late 80s, was like cry now cry later comms, the Pessimizer, was it like did people look at it weird, like, what the fuck, like, this is cholo, but this is also like very like not just metal but also very like fast, like did people like were starstruck at the time, or everybody was like, yeah, this is fucking sick?
I remember one of the first Cry Now comp, which I drew the cover on that.
Yeah.
And it's the chick like naked, right? And like, and some reviewer, and I think it was Maximum Rock and Roll, gave it shit because of the girl on the cover, tits were out or whatever.
Really?
And but that was like the only negative thing, you know. I think people didn't really understand or didn't really get what was going on there, except for people over here on this side.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And but no. Nah. It was that only that one thing.
Were you put into like a hole, like into like they're like the Chicano, like, you know what I mean? Like, because I know like me, like a lot of people have this like idea that I'm like, oh, this one says like Haina, and like I'm like, no, I'm talking like I'm from South Central, not from East LA. And people like have this idea that East LA Mexican people are like everything is from East LA, that it looks like that. Yeah. Did that happen a lot?
Oh, they were talking.
Yeah, like people just like, yeah, just pitch into like, oh, like this whole, like they already assumed like you're probably Mexican or some shit.
I don't really remember that. I don't remember that. I remember some guy, like some guy I know that lives in Whittier who's kind of turned into a somebody. Yeah. He was like, fuck man, you talked to him recently a couple years ago, and he's like, oh, you had like the Bow Wow shit and then fans, and you had this, you had that. He's like, everything was like a little bit, a couple steps ahead.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, so fucking keep doing shit like that because you're gonna be maybe two steps ahead still, you know, of like what's gonna come later or something, you know, like I don't know. But yeah, I don't remember what the question was, but yeah, there was nothing to it, you know, like as far as like backlash or any of that stuff. But also too, that was in a different time where they were like, just crying out comps came out before the internet.
Yeah.
Right? So that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
And I just did the stuff that I knew about, and that's, I didn't design those records for anybody. Mm-hmm. I designed them how I wanted them to look.
Yeah.
You know, and like, it just so happens that people fucking like it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. And how old are you around the time those comps came out? And Pessimizer and all that, it was like in the height. When you were the most busy?
Early 20s, mid-20s.
What was your life like then? What was like your life that was pushing you to like keep busy in that? Like,
I was working full-time. I didn't drive. I rode my bike everywhere.
Did you not know how to drive, or?
I just didn't have a car.
Oh.
And I was riding 20 miles a day, round trip. Then on the way home from work, I would stop at either Rogers Park, Sentinel Park, Ash Park, and play full court basketball.
Mm.
And then I would come home. I'd fucking write letters to the people I would tape trade with, or for my fanzine, or whatever the fuck. And then I was busy all the time. I was always on it, dude. Like that went on for years. And then at the time, the early 90s, and me and Phil from Despise You, the guitar player, we got a radio show at KXLU. So then I started doing that once a week, and that was Mondays from...
Can you find that anywhere?
Yeah, I'm sure you could find it on
YouTube. What was it called? What was the show
called? Power of the Goat.
Power of the Goat?
And it was underground, black, and death metal. Just demos only. Demos in 7 inches. And we had live bands, too. We had fucking tons of live bands. And I was doing that once a week, Mondays. And I just got, like, at a certain point, I just had to start giving up a couple things, you know, because it was too much, you know.
Yeah.
And I think it was already, you know. And then my daughter was born, and that was in, like, 2000. So, kind of really started to tweak things a little bit, you know, because it was too much. But yeah, I was very busy. Did the zine, doing the zine, doing the label. Band hadn't started yet. The radio show. I was helping bands book shows. Tape trading a lot. And yeah, it was a lot of things all at once. And then, there was no convenience to it. It was all writing letters.
Yeah.
And then phone calls, it was all long distance. So you had to just write the fucking letters, because do a fucking 5-minute phone call to Boston, it was probably like $8 or something.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like now, so...
Well, like, being from Inglewood, not the prettiest place, and at the time being, like, doing all this stuff that keeps you busy, do you think, in hindsight, you were trying to escape of, like, doing, like, fucked up shit, or getting into shit that you probably didn't need to get into, just because you had so much time on your hands?
Nah, there was a point where, like, there was a point, maybe in the mid to late 80s, where I was tested a bunch of times, you know, about, like, okay, we're over here. You going to go on this road, or are you going to go on that one? You know? So you either fuck it up or you don't fuck it up. And so that happened a bunch at different times. And like, that's when I felt I was being tested, you know? And, but I didn't, I did the stuff because I got something out of it. I know people were stoked, you know, like I kept me busy. I felt like, oh, I can contribute to this thing, you know? And that's why I was doing it. It wasn't to escape anything. I mean, like, as far as the gangster shit, I was hanging out with all the dudes all the time.
Yeah.
At that time.
I mean,
all the parties, all the quinceañeras, all the fucking, all the flyer parties, the fucking ditching parties, the liquor store parking lot fucking parties. Like, I was at all of them, dude.
Yeah.
I always made time for that for whatever reason. I mean, the kids that I used to skate with, all their older brothers were in the neighborhood. All of them.
Yeah.
So they and most of the skater kids that I was hanging out with, they eventually were from the neighborhood.
Yeah.
So they would look at the crew of people, of skaters that I was hanging around with, as like, this is just a little bit of a detour before they really come into the fold and start working, you know?
Yeah.
And so we would get to go to all their parties and all and everything, and we went to all of it. So 80s, into the, maybe 80s, like maybe 90, maybe 91, but certainly throughout the 84 to 89, it was like, there was a lot of that, you know?
Is there any specific stories you like to share of, like, specific people that are like, damn, this person could have really been something, or did or played really good guitar, or had the best lyrics, or et cetera, et cetera, that, like, damn, like, if only you would have kept going that route. I mean, you don't have to name them, but, like, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I had a friend who was a really good skater, like, a really good skater, and he got shot 2 times, and he got crippled.
Oh, my God.
And,
He got shot because of his fault? Or not
he
his
got
fault.
Shot because of his brothers. So, like...
He got, like, paralyzed? Like,
he got shot under his arm. He got... Car rolled up next to him. We were going to go skate that night at this place in Westwood where you had to skate it at midnight and on because it was a parking structure and all the cars would be gone at that time so we could fucking skate. It was sick. It's still there. It's called the MCO building. And, he was on his way to my house and he got shot and he almost died that night. He lost so much blood and he got crippled. Like he had to learn how to walk again and he walks fucked up now, you know, like still, he just came by. When was that big one? 6 months ago or something? Yeah, I came by that. I had some fucking dude out of like mad dogging me through my window. I was like, what the fuck is that? And I'm like, oh shit, there he is. So anyhow, yeah, so he was a fucking ripper, dude. Like he was really good, and then he got shot and he got crippled, and I got that phone call at like 2 in the morning. Like, hey, so-and-so's, he got shot, he might die, and he was at St. Ella. And I went down there, and, like, all his brothers were involved in the neighborhood and shit, you know? So, like, that parking lot was, oh, motherfuckers, dude, oh, boy. That was crazy to see everybody, like, together at that time. There was hundreds of people, gangsters. So that I mean, there's a lot of stories, but that's the one that to me stands out the most because he was, like,
naturally good,
really good,
yeah.
You know, and like then he had to learn how to walk again, you know.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I mean, like, I'm aware that's life. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
sometimes you're lucky, sometimes you're unlucky.
Mm-hmm.
But do you, like, being like from Inglewood, do you ever like, maybe not right now? I mean, you're older now. You like somehow got it, but before, did you ever resent? Like, fuck. Like, if I were only from the other side of LA, I, like, would just be good at skateboarding. And, like, you know what I mean? You don't got to deal with, like, other shit, like, coming creeping down.
The only thing I ever resented was certain other neighborhoods that I didn't like.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I resent. And that's still, I still feel that way.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, like, but yeah, I didn't want to grow up in, I didn't want to live anywhere else. I never thought, like, oh man, I wish if I lived in this part of the town, or this part of town, things would be cooler. Because I had good times here, you know, I still do, you know, like, I wouldn't have met all those people if I didn't live here. I wouldn't have done all those things if I didn't live here.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many characters, you know, not even the kids that I was kicking back with, but like their parents or their brothers or their sisters or, you know, just everything attached to it, you know.
Yeah.
And everybody has that story. Fucking cut hair, lots or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
Everybody's got their dudes, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you Do you like now? And I mean, I don't believe in the term metal saved my life or punk or none of that. But do you think if you would have not like seen Kiss or like listening to Kiss or hearing of Kiss like hit you that hard at a young age, or like even just getting into punk, like really into it, not just like you said a detour? Do you think you would have like? Because like you're from this neighborhood. On top of that, but I read your lyrics, or like I see like your lyrics are like very like unique, if that makes sense. Like it's very like don't fix me, like you can't fix me, don't trip. Like it's, that's a very like like weird, like, you know what I mean, that a lot of people like now copy, but that's like a weird way to like name a song. It's very like unbranded, if that makes sense.
Unconventional,
yeah.
We're in school now.
Yeah. Fuck.
I didn't have a blueprint for any of the stuff.
Yeah.
It's only my personal experiences. There's no politics. There's no religion.
Yeah.
I've said it to a bunch of people. I don't care who anybody votes for, and I don't care who anybody worships. Uh-huh. It'd be fucking Catholic, Christian, doesn't matter. Fuck, all my buddies growing up were Catholic.
Yeah.
All of them, they all got baptized. I'm the only one that didn't get baptized out of the whole goddamn litter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, but that's cool with me. Or, like, gay people. Who gives a fuck? I don't care.
Yeah.
Nothing affects me. Like, I'm just me.
Yeah.
And, like, I write my lyrics and we play our music and, you know, like, you know, you have, like, these bands, like, these Christian hardcore bands. That's cool. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
That's what they're into. You know, like, it doesn't affect me at all. What any of that stuff. I don't talk about it, and I don't write about it, and you know, it's cool with me what everybody's into, you know. Yeah. Same with the fucking diet shit. It's like, wanna eat fucking barbecue ribs all day? That's cool.
Yeah.
I'm not eating them, you know, but you can.
Yeah.
But it doesn't bother me, you know. I'm not hard line on any of that stuff, you know? I'm not.
Well, with like, I guess
branching out. I mean, you fucking grow up in the hood over there. The veganism doesn't mean shit.
Yeah.
Punk rock means maybe nothing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You're almost like an island. You guys are like an island on your own shit, right?
Yeah.
The fuck?
Yeah.
You know? Like,
yeah.
Same here.
You know? Yeah. One thing I want to ask you is your shirts. It's not like a drawing of like a cop, like, you know, like as a like a cheesy drawing of a cop. It's like an actual picture, but not even then. It's not like a picture of like fuck cops. It's like here's like the image of why fuck cops
with the kid in the
like most a lot of your shirts are just like here's the reason, if that makes sense. Is that like on purpose, or is it just like here's just like this image looks cool? Or,
I mean, like, because those images can say so many things to so many different people.
Yeah,
it could be positive, it could be negative, it could be like. Fuck, they're training the kid.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's so many different things. So, like, the kid smoking the cigarette.
Yeah.
He's a baby. He's fucking kids. Like, probably, what is he? Fuck, what did you say, 4 years old? Well, that's a fucking white Appalachian kid coal mining when he's 4 years old.
Yeah.
If you want to talk about, like, slave labor. I mean, that's not an old picture. You know? Like, it's not that old.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, yeah, there is a lot of children stuff in the shirts, you know? But that's, because that's where... To me, that's where it's the most, that's where shit's the most gnarly, because, like, when you're putting kids in those type of situations, then that's really bad. I mean, adults get in those situations, they can at least get themselves out or say, fuck, I'm not doing that, you know, but the kids don't really have that voice, you know, so, I don't know, it's kind of gnarly, you know, like how, to me, that's what hits hardest to me was, like, the kids.
Kids.
Like, you know, when I was a kid, that there were several kids in the neighborhood who were getting their asses kicked by the parents, you know? That kids that I would hang out with, and every time I would show up, this motherfucker's got a new fucking set of fucked up stitches under his eye. You know, like he's 4 or 5 or something, and like everyone's covering for him, his sister, his brother, like, yeah, he fell off his bike. Oh, really? What? No, it fell off a fence.
Yeah.
You know, and like, I know the parents were kicking his ass, and I felt so bad, you know, for those kids, you know, because it wasn't just one or two. I mean, it was a group, you know, over the years, and it's like, fuck, man, you know, like, but you kind of feel powerless, you know, because you are powerless. You're fucking like 10 years old. What can you do? You know,
were your parents ever struck on you or like ever like hit you? Or like,
yeah,
really,
I grew up in the 70s, man. That was part of the deal. Yeah. My mom would do it until it didn't hurt anymore. Then my dad took over. So yeah, fuck yeah. That was part of the game. I mean, that wasn't like a, what's the way to say it? Like, it was just like accepted that, like, yeah, that's, you're not, that's not abuse or disciplining them.
Yeah.
You got out of line. Yeah, like, that was a thing, too, where they would say, hey, you're going to fucking Chris Rodriguez's house down the street. If you fuck, that's what my dad would say, you fuck up over there, they'll fucking take off on you, too.
Really?
Oh, yeah, fuck yeah. And they'll say, like, and if he comes over here, same shit.
His kid's on your hands.
Me and his dad talked.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, that was just the understanding, right? I mean, it really was. It was.
Well, like, now, do you think ass beatings are necessary?
I don't think so. I don't agree with the physical stuff, you know? I would say, like, when I was a kid, I would rather take the beating and still be able to go outside and skateboard. But when they wised up and said, you know what, I'm not going to kick your ass, but your skateboard is going to go to work with me. And you don't get it.
Yeah.
That was worse.
Yeah.
You could still, you just have a fucking sore mouth or ass, yeah, still riding your skateboard, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that, I don't know if that's the best way either, but, like, the physical stuff, yeah, I don't really think that's cool. I was never like that with my daughter, you know?
Uh-huh.
But also, she wasn't being a bitch all the time or something, so I didn't need to, you know?
Yeah. So you had your kid when you were in your early 20s or
no,
mid-20s?
I was in my late 20s when I had her.
And was that a reason or one of the reasons Despise You didn't play the show?
No, not at all.
Would you like to go into why Despise You didn't?
Everybody was doing their own bands at the time, you mm-hmm. know, so we never really talked too much about playing a show. We would just get together and practice.
Even though people really wanted to see you live?
Yeah.
Man, that's crazy, like...
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't, I'm gonna dump this in. We didn't really ever talk about it, you know? It's like... We just didn't do it.
Yeah.
There was no, like... I don't know what the word for it is, like... Plan, you know? Like... Oh, we're just not gonna do it, and then we're gonna bust on the scene or something. We didn't talk about any of that shit ever, you know. Like, and then when we stopped doing stuff, which was like after the Zest of Skate record, it wasn't even a thing. Like, all right, well, I guess that's it. Like, we just stopped doing shit. We stopped practicing. We stopped recording, and everybody did their own thing. Like, it wasn't even like a planned thing or. This guy doesn't like this guy anymore, so we're not going to do anything. Like, it was nothing like that.
Was there any anxiety involved? Like the fear of, like...
Play live?
Yeah.
For me, yeah. For those other guys, no, because they had done it a bunch of times. I had never done it.
Have you had anxiety, like, really that bad?
I mean, anxiety, I wouldn't call it... I don't know if it's anxiety, but, like, I just was like, fuck, man. I was scared to fucking fuck up or forget something or whatever, but it wasn't like... I mean,
anxiety
is kind of like a clinical term now. I don't think I ever had that. I was just, like, antsy and nervous about it, but, you know.
I feel like if you're, like, a band, and, like, people already know it takes a lot for a band to even get big. Uh-huh. And for, like, being in the time where you're writing the music and releasing the music, uh-huh. and for people to be like, oh, like, I want to see you live, and to be like, damn, I'm not playing live, like, because mm-hmm. I fear a lot of stuff,
mm-hmm.
that's crazy. That's not a bad thing. It's just, like, I think that's anxiety.
Yeah, well, maybe I did have a little bit of anxiety then, but I just, I mean, back to your question, I was nervous to play a show, to play our first show, but those other guys weren't,
yeah,
because they had done it so many times.
Did they, like, any of the members ever, like, told you, like, yo, like, was there any beef, like, they wanted to play a show and you were like,
no? No, we were so busy writing and recording that it was... I mean, we would write, it was like easy to write. We would show up at practice and we'd practice over in Highland Park and we'd write 10 fucking songs every time we got together.
Yeah.
And then we'd practice again, write 5 more songs, and then we'd go record.
Yeah.
And then we'd do it again and do it again and do it again.
Were you ever like addicted to drugs?
No.
And I asked that because the album cover of West Side Horizons, like the lady with the needle. Why isn't that?
I just thought it was a fucking heavy picture.
Really? Where would you find these pictures, like pre-internet? Like just
that,
random magazine?
That one's out of a book.
Really?
Mm-hmm. We went in the bookstore and cut it out with a razor blade and then used it.
Interesting.
But so we don't get sued, someone sent us that photo and I don't know where it came from.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. I think, and when did you guys play your first show? I don't know when you guys played your first show.
I think it was in 07 at the Knitting Factory in Hollywood.
And why did what led up to like, oh, now?
Well, Chris Dodge from Spaz bumped into Phil at a party, I think it was, and said, hey man, fucking, you know, you guys should get the band back together, I'll play bass. And Phil's like, yeah, whatever. And then he thought about it, I guess, then he called me, he hit me up and he was like, you want to do it? And I go, yeah, I'm down to go together and practice and see what happens. And we did it, and at that practice we ran through some old songs, and then we wrote like two new songs, and I was like, oh shit. And then he was like, let's record a record, and I had stuff to say, so I said okay. And then then we got hit up, this guy Dan used to hit me up all the time. Hey man, he did a booking, he's a promoter, his name's Dan Dismal. And I told him, I go, if we ever play a show, we'll play your show first.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that was the LA Death Fest at the Knitting Factory. We played that. So that was the first show. And then we started playing other shows and tours, and then it just kind of went from there. And we don't do a ton of touring or any of that stuff because we all work, you know, but like, yeah, it just went from there. I mean, there was no plan. It wasn't like, oh, we're going to do this and so we can do that, and then maybe we can get on tour with this band. None of it ever was like that. Everything was just happened because it happened. Same like it still is. You know, we're not trying to like, oh, you know, like, we're on a tour with this band so we can get to this level or anything, because we just don't. We don't do that. You know, we think of cool things that we want to do, and then where people hit us up, like Pig Destroyer or fucking whoever, you know, like Municipal Waste or Iron Reagan.
Yeah.
They want to go tour. It's like, you know, it makes sense for us, then we'll go, you know, like, or we can go on tour and bring a fucking local Cell Central band with us. That's cool too. It doesn't matter. Everything's the same, you know.
So, all right, then we'll wrap this up.
Yeah.
Just because, keep it short and sweet.
Mm-hmm.
I guess one last question. Despise You comes from an era where power violence was like new and exciting, or was maybe even weird.
Mm-hmm.
I still think it kind of is weird.
Yeah.
Do you like still like power violence? Do you still like care about it? Do you think it's like it should be?
I still care about what we do. I don't listen to power violence all the time now.
Uh-huh.
So yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's the best way to put it. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you everybody for listening. Yep. Anything else you want to say?
Nope.
No, fuck you.
No, you got it all covered.
All right.